Okay.
Welcome to the Third Podcast, located in Toronto at 200 Bathurst Street at Cherry Cola's Rock and Roll Cabaret. Your host is Bob Segarini with Roxanne Tellier. Tonight's musical guest is George Casey, playing with the podcast band X Prime. We will also be talking to journalist Nadia L. Caradley. Also appearing is author manager Jerry Young. Now, let's have a warm welcome for Bob Segarini!
Oh, the love. The love is all over me, and I don't have any paper towels. Welcome to Cherry Cola's Rock and Roll Cabaret and Lounge. Say hello, and good evening to Miss Roxanne Tellier. Right here.
Hello.
Okay, we got kind of a fun-filled show tonight. I want to bring up a guy I've known. We were talking about this earlier. Neither one of us can remember where or how we met. Sometime between 1977 and, let's say, 1984 or 5. So we discussed this briefly, and I realized that from 1977 to 1989, actually, everybody in the entertainment business was doing really well. And we were all having a great time, and we were doing drugs back then, simply because they were available, and it was back in the days when you shared. You didn't hide it. You didn't, you know, go under your bed in the bedroom and get high. You were like everywhere going, hey, you want a line? Let's do a line. I don't have a line. We said, well, you don't have a line. Let's smoke a joint. Hey, you have a joint? And that's what it was like. And I'm not even embarrassed to say that I survived it, but a lot of people didn't. Anyway, so back in those days, I met this guy, and this is probably why we don't remember how we did. But please, a very warm welcome for an interesting man. He's a manager, he's an author, and he has spent some heavy-duty time in the bunker that was the record business. Give a hand, please, for Mr. Jerry Young.
Hello, everybody, and thank you very much for having me here.
Now, this is Jerry's book, by the way. It's called Pop Goes the Weasel, Rock and Roll Off the Record by Jerry Young. And this is a terrific book, and it's available on
Amazon.com, Chapters Indigo, Barnes & Noble, etc.
And there are some insanely fun stories in here. Jerry, you were at Polydor when I met you.
I was. I was actually, Bob, I met you in, as you said, who knows what year, but it was between 77 and 80, I believe. And okay. I was a promotion manager at Polygram. And Polygram at that time is like Universal now.
A big label, yeah.
Like it had giant basically 30 to 40% of the worldwide acts. So I was
How's that going now?
Well, the record business ain't going too well now. But nevertheless, at the time, record business was doing quite well, as you well know. And Polygram was probably the biggest label at the time. And I took care of every major band who came through Canada.
You were like the liaison with a lot of the labels.
Set up their interviews for all the bands coming through town.
Artist relations, I think it was called.
Media relations.
Tell the people, some of the people that you worked with. I mean, just this list. I read it earlier today.
See, it is hard to remember.
You know, I've got it written down on a...
Johnny Winter, T-Rex, Jerry Lee Lewis, Randy Bachman, Frank Zappa, Bob Geldof, Boomtown Rats, Kiss, 10cc, Dire Straits, XTC, Peter Gabriel, Village People, Parachute Club, Little Richard, Phil Spector.
A lot of folks. You worked with a lot of people. And I can imagine that you have a couple of decent stories.
Ask me about anyone.
How about this? How about... who would we want to hear about? Well, Phil Spector's in the news again because of the film last week. And so what's your Phil Spector story?
At one time, I was actually back in the 90s. I was moonlighting and actually teaching a class at Trevis Institute, a music school here in Toronto. And the owner of the school, Dave, I forget his last name, was for some reason friends with Phil Spector. And the graduation ceremony that year... he invited Phil Spector to be the keynote speaker. So Phil showed up, and of course, most of the students didn't know who Phil Spector was. Of course, I knew who Phil Spector was. I'm old enough to know You've Lost That Love and Feeling, etc. So I knew The Wall of Sound, and I knew he was the man. So, you know, he, after his little keynote speech, he asked for questions, and of course, most of the students didn't know who he was, and so I had no questions. So I, as a teacher, put up my my hand and said, "Hey, Phil, have you thought of producing anybody else since your glory days?" And I thought it was a bit of a heavy question because maybe he's not in that mood.
Maybe he didn't want to tell you.
Didn't want to tell me, but I mean, he just said, "Oh, there's a band, Star Sailor, I'm working with in England. Maybe something will come of that, I'm not sure." He left the stage and everybody applauded, not knowing who he was. And I ran after him sort of to the elevator because I wanted to say hello to him before he sort of left. And I said, "Phil, how you doing?" He's pressing the button madly at the to get the hell
get away
the,
from you.
Get away from me or the whole scene. I'm not sure which. And I said, "Look, thanks for coming. It was great to hear you. Great to meet you here." And blah, blah, blah. And he says, "Look, are there cabs downstairs?" I said, "Yeah, there's cabs. It's a hotel. There's cabs downstairs." And just then, the rest of the students were coming out of the hall towards the elevators, and it's now surrounding the elevators, and he's madly pressing, and finally it came, and he got in, and they started getting in, think it was going down, he went, "It's going up!" And that was the end of Phil.
I'm surprised he didn't whip out a gun and just shoot.
Oh, by the way, somebody actually interviewed me last week and said here's a guy who actually met Phil Spector and lived to tell about it.
I still don't think he shot that woman, but
I'm not sure.
When you folded your tent at Polydor, when did you leave the record?
I was at Polygram for a number of years, and the Bee Gees for 3 years, and I was promotion manager, and I dealt with.
Did you say the Bee Gees?
Bee Gees. They'd just come through town. The Bee Gees had just come through town, and frankly, you know, everybody laughs about the Bee Gees, but
no, I love
at the time, the band was the biggest band in the world, and it sold more records than anybody else, and they were huge. And they came to town, and I said to the vice president of marketing, "Okay, so what are we doing for them when they're in town?" And he said, "We're doing nothing." And I said, "We're doing nothing." I said, "We just spent $80,000 on the Village People 3 months ago, so we're doing nothing now for the Bee Gees." He says, "That's right. It's the limos. That's it." So I said, "Okay, fair enough." So I went back and met the band afterwards or before the show and said hello and said we were there supporting them. But I knew we weren't really supporting them. And so I went back to the office the next day and I said, "You know, I think I'm out of here." And I sort of started telling the vice president that I wasn't happy with how there's no money available. And he said, "Well, if you don't like it, that's how we do things around here, Jerry." And I said, "You know, son, that's it." And just then, that week, Martha and the Muffins, a band who had a song called Echo Beach.
We love very much here in Toronto.
Came to me. They just finished coming back from Virgin Records in England, where they recorded the album in Echo Beach. And they said, "Jerry," because we handled, Polygram handled Virgin. And they said, "Jerry, we know you. We have no manager. We've got a worldwide hit coming out of England. And will you quit Polygram to manage us? Because otherwise we're going to quit." And I said, "What's going on? You got a worldwide hit and you're going to quit playing?" And they said, "Yeah, because Richard Branson and the people at Dindus Records, an affiliate of Virgin in England, they're telling us what to wear, who's got to sing this song, who's got to do this, who's got to do that. And we need somebody to tell them to basically screw off." And
what a good manager does, Jerry.
Which a good manager apparently does. And I didn't know because I'd never been a manager before. But apart from looking at them from afar in terms of when they came to town with their bands. And so I thought to myself, you know, everybody told me, "Don't do this. It's a waste of time. Like, it's a one-hit wonder thing. It's forget it. Stay with." So, of course, I didn't take that advice. And I quit Polygram to manage the band. So that was that.
Martha and the Muffins and Echo Beach are responsible for you becoming a manager.
That's correct.
And then you became a manager. You're still a manager.
I'm still a manager, and we had a couple of rough years because they didn't have a follow-up hit right away, and the second album bombed.
They played a lot, though. They got to play.
They got a lot of play, and they played, but it looked like I'd made a mistake because the second album didn't pan out. And we were about to sign for a third album with Virgin, and Richard Branson said, "I'll give you $80,000 instead of $100,000, which is what the third album called for." And I said, "No, that's not." Daniel Lanois is producing it for us. This before you two or anybody else.
Yeah, Daniel went on to do fairly well.
Daniel went on to do fairly well. And I said, "Well, we got Daniel Lanois producing, and he's from Hamilton, and he's one of our buddies. And he, we need $80,000 for him. The $80,000 would only pay for him. The band get nothing." So he said, "Well, that's best we can do. We're dropping everybody but Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark from our label. We want to keep you." And I said, "No, that's not enough." So he, at that point, said, "We can't do any more than 80. I said, "Please give us the rights all back." we got the rights back, and I started a record company called Current Records.
Yeah, Current Records. I remember Current Records very well.
And we signed the Parachute Club and bands like that.
Yeah, Parachute Club, Rise Up, one of the greatest records to ever come out of Canada, that's Toronto right. especially.
That was a great, actually, how that happened. I'd seen the band in After Hours Club here in Toronto.
Yeah, you have to tuck into that. Forget I'm here.
I'm sorry, pal. I'd seen the band.
That's another 4 hours work for me tonight.
I'm sorry, pal. You know that. I'd seen the band in After Hours Club after Richard O'Brien of the Bamboo had said to me, Jerry, you got to go see this band.
Talked about Richard earlier tonight.
So I went and saw the band in After Hours Club with Daniel Lanois, as a matter of fact. And we both agreed that this was a pretty good band. So I went, and they'd only written one song at that point called Alienation. They hadn't written Rise Up. So I went to the band after the show and said, I like what you do. I'd like to sign you to my label. I've got a label called Current Records, and we have Martha and the Muffins, and you'd be our second band. And they said, well, we only have one song. And I said, yeah, but it was that song called Alienation. I mean, I recognized it was not the cover. It was not a cover. That was your song. They said, yeah, that's right. I said, okay, well, if you can write that one, you can write a bunch more. So they said, well, so they checked me out for about 3 or 4 days, apparently, and then signed to us. I gave them a $90,000 advance, $20,000 up front for the band, 8 people to split.
Where are you guys now?
Band each got about $2,000 apiece. 4 of them went down to Trinidad Tobago, and like Mamas and the Papas did when they wrote their big album, and ended up going to the carnival there. And after the carnival, wrote Rise Up and about 5 other songs, came back to Toronto, and we had our album.
What a fabulous, amazing band. Billy Bryan's, Lorraine Segato, one of the great singers. And
Laurie Conger, Julie Massey.
Yeah.
Dave Gray. Great
the
people.
Little sax player.
Margo Davidson.
Yes. Wonderful people, and did so much for not only the gay community in the city.
Absolutely.
But that record was just infectious.
Rise Up was the single of the year in 1983.
Yeah. So who else did you have on the label?
Strange Advance, a band from Vancouver. I actually tried to sign Northern Pikes because at one time I had an A&R side deal with Polygram. Yeah. Polygram hired me back.
Well, of course they did.
After I discovered the
you were right, they were wrong.
Suddenly I'm on a run, so they went, Jerry, would you come back and do some A&R for us? So I found them, the Northern Pikes, out of Saskatchewan, Saskatoon, I believe, and came, and they had...
What was the teen... Teen something.
Teenland.
I played that on K107 again.
That was the song. I basically said to Polygram, you've hired me to A&R. Here's a Canadian band. This is a band you should sign. They didn't sign the band.
No.
I quit Polygram again for the second time as an A&R consultant, but Warner Brothers did sign the band, and the band went gold with Teenland.
So you're still, do you still have Current?
I have Current management now. I don't have the record company anymore, but Current management still
and,
exists.
And you brought one of your acts,
one of my greatest friends and greatest performers.
And how did you find this gentleman? Because I'm going to bring him up now.
Actually, a friend of mine came to me a number of years ago, three or four years ago, and said, Jerry, I've got a guy... friend of mine who I think is great. He's from Pembroke, Ontario. He plays great music. And I said, well, let me hear him. So his name's George Casey, and I said, fine, bring him over. So he came over to my house. We talked. I listened to a few demos, and I said, this is fantastic. You've got to record this stuff. So he did, and his first album came out called Get It On, and he's done great stuff internationally and in Canada. So I'm very pleased that he's come here tonight.
All right. Well, listen, Jerry, thanks a lot. We're pressed for time tonight, but I want to have you back sometime because I want to hear some more stories.
Anytime.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob.
Ladies and gentlemen, give it up, please. Jerry Yo.